The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Rivka Skidmore from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Flavor is about helping you live a healthier, happier lifestyle. Boost productivity, the fine art of limiting yourself to the essential. Limit yourself in tasks, goals, and time spent using the Haiku productivity system to increase your efficiency when in the office or working around the house, by Leo Babota. Instead of spending too much time in front of the TV, find ways to improve the quality of your interactions with people you care about. Perhaps you've heard of the Pareto principle, known as the 80-20 rule. It's a common rule of thumb in business that suggests 80% of sales come from 20% of your clients. In the world of simple living, we could use it to suggest that 80% of our benefits come from 20% of our efforts. While I don't think the percentages are exact, the principle is true. We should focus on the few things that get us the most benefit. In an effort to figure out a systematic way to focus the essential stuff and eliminate the rest, I developed what's called the Haiku productivity. The key to Haiku productivity is to limit yourself to an arbitrary but small number of things, forcing yourself to focus on the important stuff and eliminate all else. To understand the simple concept, think about the form of the haiku, the common version at least. It's poetry in 17 syllables, with 3 lines of 5, 7, and 5 syllables. I know there are variations, and it's only a rough definition, but that's not important here. The point is that the form of the haiku is extremely limited to a small number of lines and syllables, forcing the poet to focus on only those words that mean the most to the poem. While other forms of poetry can go on for pages, haiku are short and compact. As a result, haiku can be some of the most powerful poems in any language. Limited but productive. So how does this apply to productivity? Well, if you think this will allow you to accomplish twice as many tasks, you're wrong. You'll accomplish fewer tasks, but you'll most likely be more effective because you'll have to choose only the essential tasks, the ones that'll give you the most benefit for your limited time. It also forces you to limit the time you spend on things, which means you have more time for the things that are most important to you. There is only one rule to haiku productivity: put limits on everything you do. That's it. What are the things you do? It's different for everyone. Common items for an office worker might be email, phone calls, reaching out to new contacts, social media, time wasters, organizational tasks. What limits should you set? Again, it's different for everyone. Base yours on your own experience and your experimentation. Here are the limits I've set for myself that seem to work, but remember, they'll be different for you. One goal. The number of goals I'm allowed to have at any one time. I can only focus on one goal at a time. Any more than that, and I lose focus and energy. Two times to process email. If I only allow myself to check email twice a day, I cannot let email control my life. This makes me much more efficient. When I process email, I process to empty. Now, there are other times during the day when I have to send mail, such as emailing a post to one of my editors. At that time, I might respond quickly to one or two emails, but I don't process my email at that time. Three MITs. I choose the three most important tasks for each day and focus completely on these. Any more than that, and I might not get them all done. Four batch tasks. Along with MITs, I also give myself four smaller tasks that I try to batch all at once. This usually takes me 30 to 60 minutes at the end of the day. Five-sentence emails. I got this idea from Mike Davidson, vice president of design at Twitter. I read an article of his at a perfect time as I was limiting other things in my life, and I was trying to keep my emails short. His five-sentence rule, no email can be longer than five sentences, fit in perfectly with everything else I tried to do, and I've adopted it. It forces you to write only what's essential. I broke the rule at first, but I've been pretty good lately. The rule also limits the amount of time you spend replying to email and makes processing a breeze. 6 news articles. I've adjusted this as I've experimented, but I've settled on reading 6 articles per day. The method? I open my news source headlines, whether you get news from social media, news organization sites, or whatever, choose just 6 to read, and open them in new tabs. 7 minutes of wasted time. This is for fun. But when I've completed a task, I reward myself with 7 minutes of being able to do anything I want. That means I can read a humor site, go read comments on my blog, or look through Delicious, or Dig, or a forum, whatever I want, for 7 minutes. Then, I go back to work. This allows me to have a little fun sprinkled throughout my day, but it limits it. I set a timer, and it totally works. Again, your limits and the things you limit will vary depending on your situation. And I'm in no way suggesting that you adopt these limits. But by restricting yourself to a small number of things, you force yourself to focus only on the essential. It'll make a world of difference. Give it a try. Let me know what you think. You are listening to Flavor on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Solved. This is the right way to water your plants and bring them back to life if they're dead, by Veronica Peerless. The simple act of watering creates a lot of worry among houseplant owners. We tend to fall into 2 camps, those who neglect them for weeks and those who water too much. Neither scenario is ideal, but overwatering is actually the number one cause of houseplant death. That's because a lot of people think that if a plant's dirt isn't saturated at all times, it'll die of thirst. In fact, the opposite is true. Very moist soil rots the roots, killing the plant. And because of signs of under- and overwatering are largely the same, either way, the plant wilts. People often water the plant some more in hope that it'll help. It's a vicious cycle. Okay, so how can I make sure I'm watering my plant just right? At the end of the day, less is more when it comes to watering, but it's hard to say exactly how much you should be watering all of your plants since it depends on size, leaves, location in your home, and even the type of pot. Terracotta dries out more quickly than plastic. But as a rule of thumb, every 1 or 2 weeks in the spring and summer, and slightly less often in the winter, is about right. Here are tips for watering effectively. Don't water on a schedule. Don't water everything just because you have a can out. Get to know your plants, and you'll notice that some dry out more quickly than others. Allocate watering duties to one member of the household. This will help you avoid accidental overwatering. A pot with very dry soil will feel light. Water most plants when the top centimeter or 2 centimeters of compost is dry. Gently poke your finger in the compost. If the top layer is crumbly and dry, it's time to water. If foliage is covering the surface of the compost, go by weight of the pot. A pot with very dry soil will feel light. Aim for dirt that is as moist as a wrung-out shirt. It's a weird analogy, but it works. If the compost is consistently wet and soggy, you've overdone it. The aim is to moisten all of the compost, not just the top. The water needs to get right down to the roots. Use a watering can or stand plants in a bowl of water. If you're using a can, pour slowly and gently avoid the water draining straight through to the saucer below and potentially overflowing onto your furniture. Standing the plant in a dish, a bucket, or a bowl is a good option for plants that have dried out a lot or foliage that covers the compost. Let excess water drain away. Again, this is to avoid the dreaded soggy compost. Stand plants on a draining board or pour any excess water out of the plant saucer after a half hour. use water that is room temperature. Cold water shocks the plant, especially if it originally hails from a tropical climate. Water less frequently from November to March, unless the plant is in flower. Most plants are not actively growing in the winter. Plants in centrally heated rooms, however, can dry out, so keep an eye on them. Don't splash water on the leaves. This can cause unsightly blotches and potentially gray mold. If you have orchids in particularly, remember to dip and drain. Orchids are grown in coarse soil, which makes it hard to tell when they need watering. Put the plant in a bucket or sink in a tepid water and leave for 10 minutes. Leave to drain thoroughly and do this around once a week in spring and summer, less often in autumn and winter. How to save a wilted, thirsty plant? First, make sure that your plant is actually thirsty by feeling the soil. If it's dry, move the plant somewhere shady and fill a bowl with tepid water. Dunk the pot into it and weigh it down if it floats. Soak for around 30 minutes to drain. The plant should revive in an hour or two. How to save a wilted, waterlogged plant? If the soil is waterlogged, this is much more serious, and you may not be able to save your plant. Remember the pot and wrap the root ball with newspaper and paper towels. Replace them until they have soaked up all the moisture. Keep the plant out of direct sun and keep the compost just moist for a few weeks. Plants that can cope with less water are aloe vera, crown of thorns, desert cactuses, dragon tree, an inch plant, calencho, money plant, snake plant, spider plants, string of hearts, yucca, and azizi plant. You are listening to Flavor on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. How to Make Your Bedroom Better for the Environment and You by Laura Gaskill. Wouldn't it be lovely to enter your bedroom at the end of a long day to find a clean, peaceful oasis of calm instead of a tangled disarray of dirty laundry and piles of clutter? If that seems like a stretch, you're not alone. It may be easy to put off decorating and spruce up this private zone, but because of sleep, and by extension, quality of life, depends on it. It's worth it to make your bedroom a place you can't wait to relax. The following steps cover simple tasks, most of which can be completed in a weekend, that will make your bedroom healthier, cleaner, less cluttered, and more peaceful. A beautiful, harmonious space where you can let go of your day. Envision a deeply restorative place. The best way to begin any design project is with a clear vision of your hopes for the end result. Take a moment to ponder what your ideal bedroom space would look like and how it would feel. The scent, the textures, the sounds. Create as clear a picture as you possibly can and hold that in your mind as you move forward with your project. Clean the air. Air quality affects health and wellness, and poor air quality can impact sleep. The easiest way to clean the air in your room is to open your windows. Commit to letting fresh air in your bedroom at least 10 minutes each day, and the air quality is sure to improve. Take it a step further. You may want to add several potted plants or an air purifier. Limit technology and remove your emotional clutter. When you visualize your ideal bedroom, I'd wager it wasn't filled with clutter or tangles of wires dangling from your laptop. Give yourself a break from tech devices at night. It'll help promote deeper rest, and it's probably a good idea health-wise as well. Also, take a moment to consider the things that you have stored in your bedroom. Are there boxes of bills, paperwork that make your stomach knot each time you see them, piles of clothes that no longer fit, workout tools you don't use, or photos of friends you have a tense relationship? All of these things can contribute to stress and insomnia. They must go. Clean thoroughly and naturally. Often, our bedrooms fall way down to the bottom of our cleaning to-do list, simply because not many others have to see our private spaces. But keeping your bedroom clean and dust-free is essential for creating a healthy, restful environment. It's time to quit procrastinating and break out the cleaning supplies. Use an all-purpose natural cleaner, warm water, and a microfiber cloth. Clean your bookshelves, window shelves, and baseboards, where paint chips and dust tend to collect. If you have a hanging light fixture or fan, mirror, mantel, window shades, give those a wipe down as well. Vacuum floors and mop your hard floors, or steam clean your carpets. Leave your shoes at the door. Now that your bedroom is clutter-free and clean, it's time to commit to keeping it that way. Start a no-shoes policy, in your whole house if you can, but at least in the bedroom. Place a table or a basket outside your bedroom door to remind you to drop work materials, cell phones, and other gadgets before entering your new zone of calm. Create an organic bed. If you're in need of a new mattress and can afford to spring for it, by all means go for one of those wonderful organic versions on the market today. If not, that doesn't mean you can't clean up your bed. Try topping your mattress with a natural mattress pad and adding organic pillows and sheets. Organic goods are so mainstream now they can be found at all price points. Consider the walls and floors, and while it does take more effort than any of the previous steps, addressing your walls and floors is an important part of creating a more eco-friendly bedroom. If you're looking to change the wall color, seek out paint containing low or no volatile organic compounds, VOCs. If you have old peeling paint that may contain lead, use caution and seek professional guidance for the best way to cover it. For the floor, I recommend choosing hard flooring over wall-to-wall carpeting, which is notoriously difficult to clean and tends to contain VOCs. If you already have wall-to-wall carpeting in place, you can choose to have it removed or simply cover much of it with a natural fiber area rug. Choose the right color palette for your needs. Do you find it more difficult to get to sleep at night or get going in the morning? If you need help unwinding at night, choose cool colors such as blue, lavender, gray, and silver to put you in the right mind frame to relax. On the other hand, if you conk out at night and need to hit the snooze button a couple of times before dragging yourself out of bed, you may want to put on warm, energizing tones. Gold, honey, sunshine yellow may work for you. You are listening to Flavor on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Dark Chocolate Peanut Butter Banana Bites. Dark Chocolate Peanut Butter Banana Bites are a quick, easy, and healthy dessert recipe that can be made ahead of time. When trying to come up with a healthy dessert recipe to make with my sister, I stumbled across Dark Chocolate Peanut Butter Banana Bites. They're a perfect snack to pop right after dinner when you need to satisfy a sweet tooth. Plus, they have just 3 ingredients and are super healthy to make. There are seriously few better things in the world than the combination of peanut butter and chocolate. I also happen to be a huge fan of a combination of peanut butter and banana, so these are perhaps the perfect sweet treat for me. I'm one of those annoying people who is born without a sweet tooth, or at least I don't get sweet cravings very often, especially when I avoid sugar. When I do crave something, I like to have peanut butter chocolate banana bites in my deep freezer. They're super easy to make, super delicious, and perfect portion for control. I like to use dark chocolate chips, but you can use baking chocolate or semi-sweet chocolate chips to make these. The only hard part about making these is transferring the peanut butter between the banana slices, so I recommend spraying a teaspoon with cooking spray and dropping dots of peanut butter. You can also try putting the peanut butter in the freezer for a short time so it hardens just enough to handle. These dark chocolate peanut butter bites are also a fun recipe with kids and friends. Don't be afraid to make a mess. That's what paper towels are for. For dark chocolate peanut butter banana bites, you'll need 2 medium ripe bananas, 1/4 cup of creamy nut butter, 3/4 cup of baking chocolate or dark chocolate chips, 1.5 tablespoons of coconut oil. Cover a baking sheet with parchment paper and slide each banana into thin slices and arrange 1/2 the pieces on the baking sheet. Spread peanut butter onto each banana slice, and then cover each slice with another slice. Place in the freezer for about 30 minutes or until frozen. Then, place the coconut oil in a microwave-safe bowl and microwave until melted. Stir in the chocolate and continue to microwave until smooth. Use a fork or a spoon to cover each banana bite in chocolate and then place back on the sheet and freeze for 1 hour and enjoy. Store in the freezer and thaw a few minutes before eating. You are listening to Flavor on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Poet and activist Cleo Wade has the best tip for cultivating strong friendships by Emma Lowe. Last year, the New York Times called poet, artist, and activist Cleo Wade's everybody's BFF. Scrolling through Wade's Instagram account, stacked with motivational prose in her signature block font, it's certainly easy to feel like she's your friend, too. Her words are simple, but they provide a familiar pang of comfort. Being an ally to her 474,000 Instagram followers, Wade puts a lot of work into her IRL friendships, too. When I caught up with Wade in an event for Aries' Air Real Spring campaign, which features diverse array of strong spokesmen such as Iskra Lawrence, Molly Burke, Samira Wiley, and Brenna Huckabee, the theme of supportive communities naturally came up. For this latest campaign, Aerie, a brand that stopped retouching all of its ads in 2014, chose to work with ambassadors who stand for women's empowerment, self-love, and self-care. Surrounded by authentic images of women lifting each other up, Wade surrounded herself with her favorite rituals to do alongside friends. The writing ritual Wade practices with close friends. I'll pass around a notepad and write poetry with my friends. Basically, force them all to write with me. I'll write a line, then they will, she said, adding that sometimes the people gathered around the table will be creative types. Others couldn't be further from it. Some of my friends who are CEOs or work in finance actually write some of my favorite lines. My friend Molly, who owns a clothing line, wrote this line to finish off one of our poems recently. My favorite secrets are the ones that are ours. She obviously doesn't write poetry, ever. But we all have this part of us that has an ability to speak to the heart of another person. This dinnertime tradition doubles as a way to practice her craft without the pressure of a massive audience. It's important to have playtime in whatever your medium is. You don't really know what you want to say, if every time you say something, there's a goal attached. It's also to show of the thought and intention Wade thinks fuel close race relationships, romantic and otherwise. One of my friends recently gave me some of the best advice anyone's ever given me. She said that when it comes to friendships, you have to ask yourself, is this someone who I'm invested in for a lifetime? If so, what does a lifetime investment look like? Just like people enter a marriage contract, you enter a friendship knowing it's going to be hard and frustrating, and you're both going to be ever-changing, but you commit nonetheless. Wade's writing habits and reading list. When she's not gathering with friends or speaking for campaigns she believes in, it's her second year with Aerie, a brand she says has diversity and inclusivity ingrained into everything it does. Wade says she's a creature of routine. She did 90% of the writing for her first book, Heart Talk, Poetic Wisdom for a Better Life, at a desk in her East Village apartment, surrounded by a constant supply of weak matcha for caffeine fix, and a bowl of salty jalapeno potato chips for a pop of energy, a sage stick to clear the energy around her, and the work of some people she has never met, but in whose words and art she finds companionship: Angela Davis, Gloria Steinem, James Baldwin, and Maya Angelou. Here's to maintaining close friendships, whether they play out over a dinner table or on a page. You are listening to Flavor on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Bring on the sunshine. The FDA wants to make sunscreen safer, by Emma Lowe. The FDA announced that it wants to clean up the U.S. sunscreen industry by further investigating the safety and efficacy of different options on the market. The FDA proposal would require sunscreen companies to list active ingredients on the front of their products and cap the maximum SPF value on labels to 60+, since anything higher won't necessarily be a bit more effective at blocking out sun's rays. In addition, the FDA opened its doors to companies and scientists who have data on 12 chemicals commonly used in sunscreens that might pose a threat to human health, particularly oxybenzone, which has been linked to increased rates of endometriosis in women and distributed sperm production in men. Sunscreen usage has changed, with more people using the product more frequently and in larger amounts. At the same time, sunscreen formulations have evolved as companies innovated. Today's action is an important step in the FDA's ongoing efforts to take into account modern science to ensure the safety and effectiveness of sunscreens, FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb, MD, said in a statement. The next step for the agency will be reviewing sunscreens on the market and their ingredients before making any final rule. This is the first time in decades that the FDA has attempted to update the sunscreen requirements. The Environmental Working Group, EWG, a longtime advocate of stricter regulation for the industry, applauded the announcement in the press call. The FDA's announcement is going to send a lightning bolt through the sunscreen industry. It's long overdue, but it's incredibly welcome news, said Scott Faber, the Senior VP for Government Affairs at EWG. It's great news for the consumers who are seeking products that work and are safe, but aren't designed to confuse. You are listening to Flavor on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And now a recipe for cranberry chocolate bark. You'll need a half a cup of sugar-free chocolate chips, a half a cup of solid coconut oil, 2 tablespoons unsweetened shredded coconut, 2 tablespoons of sliced almonds, and 2 tablespoons of dried cranberries or other dried fruit. Line a 9-inch pie plate with a circle of parchment paper and set aside. In a double broiler, combine chocolate chips and coconut oil. Heat until melted and well combined, stirring occasionally. Add the coconut, almonds, and dried fruit, and stir well to combine. Pour the mixture into a prepared pie plate and refrigerate to allow the bark to set until solid. Turn the bark out onto a work surface and break it into bite-sized pieces. Run out of time for today's episode of Flavor. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Rivka Skidmore, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Flavor is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long, until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to Flavor.